Sí, no lo es, sí, creo que vengo ahora, ¿no? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Okay. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 6th Canto, Chapter 1, titled The History of the Life of Ajamiyo. So today we're finally going to hear the story of Ajamiyo. We're going to start with text 20 to 20 today. Atragodaharantimam Ditihasampuratanam Dutanam Vishnuyamayo Sangvadastam Acchādhārantimam Itihāsaṁ purātanam Dūtānāṁ Saṁvādhāstāṁ vinodhaye. Acchādhārantimam Sampuratanam Dutanam Vishnuyamaya. Okay, Atra. In this connection, Cha also Udaharanti, they give as an example Imam. This itihasam, the history of Ajamil, Puratanam, which is very old, Dutanam, of the order carriers, Vishnu, of Lord Vishnu, Yamayoho, and of Yamaraj, Sangvadaha, the discussion, Tam, that. Nibodha, try to understand. Me, from me. Translation report. In this regard, learned scholars and saintly persons describe a very old historical incident involving a discussion between the order carriers of Lord Vishnu and those of Yamaraj. Please hear of this from me, purport. The Puranas, or old histories, are sometimes neglected by unintelligent men who consider their descriptions mythological. Actually, the descriptions of the Puranas, or the old histories of the universe, are factual, although not chronological. The Puranas record the chief incidents that have occurred over many millions of years, not only on this planet, but also on other planets within the universe. Therefore, all learned and realized Vedic scholars speak with references to the incidents in the Puranas. Srila Rupa Goswami accepts the Puranas to be as important as the Vedas themselves. Therefore, in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, he quotes the following verse from the Brahma Yamala. Shruti Smriti Puranari Pancharatra Vidhim Vina Akantiki Harir Bhaktir Utpatayaiva. Quote, devotional service of the Lord that ignores the authorized Vedic literatures like the Upanishads, Puranas, and Narada Pancharatra is simply an unnecessary disturbance in society. End quote. A devotee of Krishna must refer not only to the Vedas, but also to the Puranas. One should not foolishly consider the Puranas mythological. If they were mythological, Shukadev Goswami would not have taken the trouble to recite the old historical incidents concerning the life of Ajamil. Now the history begins as follows. Okay, so we're hearing Shukadev Goswami just finished giving the answer to Maharaj Parikshit's question about how one can become freed from going to hell, freed from seeing the Yamadutas and going into the hellish planets. And the answer that he gave was, I'll just engage in bhakti yoga. He said, even if you're not a completely self-realized soul, if anyone just once surrenders unto Krishna, he can be freed from going to the hellish planets and he can be saved. Also, Lord Chaitanya confirms that in the Chaitanya Charitamrita when he was describing the process of devotional service to Sanatana Goswami. Lord Chaitanya said that one can very easily get out of the clutches of Maya if he seriously and sincerely says, my dear Lord, although I've forgotten you for so many lives, for so many years, today I am surrendering unto you. I am your eternal servant, sincere and serious servant. Please engage me in your loving devotional service. And then Lord Chaitanya made a vow. It is my vow that anyone who seriously, sincerely, just once surrenders unto me, saying, from now on, I am yours, and he prays to the Lord for courage, then Lord Chaitanya will immediately grant courage to that person, and he will be safe from then on. So that's where we're getting. And then now this story that we're going to hear now with the life of Ajamil, we're going to hear an example of how that's true. So one of the first verse is talking, this incident was apparently happened a very long time ago. It's in the Puranic times. I think I heard one place that this incident happened in Satya Yuga. So it's a very, very long time ago. And things that happened a really, really long time ago or in another planet or, not here in our present situation, certain things seem to be really far out and difficult to understand. You know, we hear about things which we have no experience of. So therefore, when people read this nowadays, they think it's mythological. So one of the first questions that people ask when they come to Krishna consciousness or even any religious tradition is they ask, do you guys really believe this? That this actually happened? Like, do you accept this as historical fact? Or is this just like symbolism? I'm sure we've all at least thought about it. I'm sure others have asked the same question to us. So it's a good question. I remember I asked it when I first was coming around. I was hearing about Durvasa Muni, how he was being chased by Lord Vishnu's chakra. And I'm like, did that really happen? Somebody, or is this just like a symbolism or something? Of course, our answer is that, yeah, it really happened. These are historical facts that are going on. In fact, there was this discussion between Radhanath Maharaj and this like Harvard professor who's also a priest in the Catholic tradition, Professor Clooney, and they were having a discussion, and one of the questions that was asked to both of them was this same question, like, do you guys really accept this as historical fact, or is this just symbolism? It's not, I guess different people answer it different ways. This Catholic priest just kind of evaded the question. He didn't really answer so straightforwardly. He just talked about different images of God found in the Bible. The image of God as the brother, as the king, as the one who feed the poor. So therefore, because there's so many images of God, therefore it's accommodating to so many different groups of people. And so therefore, the door is open for everybody. This is how he answered the question, which didn't really answer the question at all. Either he might not have understood or he was just going around the point. And then Radhanath Maharaj, he gave a very nice answer. He said, well, those great souls, the sages and saints who imbibe this deep compassion and love, and who are filled with devotion to God. And so, and you know, all the people that I've met like this, and so many histories of people like this, they've all accepted this as historical fact. And I found out that when I associate with those people who have imbibed these devotion, these qualities of devotion to God, when I associate with them, that I also begin to, my understanding of God increases, and therefore I'm able to understand what God can actually do and how amazing he actually is, so therefore I can accept this. So I thought that was a very nice answer, because so many amazing things, fantastic things are going on all over the, all the time. You know, like the miracle of birth, you know, consciousness, perception, so many like far out things are going on all the time. We don't consider it mythological, but because it happens every day, we think it's normal. So, of course, we'd also be happy if somebody even just accepted this as symbolism, and they read it, you know, and if they like improve their character just by thinking it's symbolism, then that's great. Go ahead, think in that way. And then gradually you'll begin to understand more about who God is and what God can actually do, and you might start thinking, wow, this could actually be true, that God can do these amazing things. Okay, so I got a kind of a large section here. I'm supposed to kind of cover a lot of verses today, so we're just going to kind of keep going. Is there any questions on this verse? Any comments? Puranas are a part of the Vedas. So the Vedas are divided into different sections, the Upanishads, the Vedas, the Shruti, Smriti. I don't know, there's all these different categories. Vedas is just the general term which means knowledge. They're all written by Vyasadeva. And then Puranas is just means like histories. It's like the histories within the category of the Vedas. Okay, so we'll go on to text 21. I'll just read the Sanskrit. Kanyakubje dvija kasche dasi patir jamilaha namna nashta sadhacharo dasya sangsarga dushitaha. Translation: in the city known as Kanyakubja, there was a brahmana named Ajamil who married a prostitute maidservant and lost all his brahminical qualities because of the association of that low class woman. Purport: the fault of illicit connection with women is that it makes one lose all brahminical qualities. In India, there's still a class of servants called shudras, whose maidservant wives are called shudranis. Sometimes people who are very lusty establish relationships with such maidservants and sweeping women, since in the higher statuses of society, they cannot indulge in the habit of woman hunting, which is strictly prohibited by social convention. Ajamil, a qualified brahmana youth, lost all his brahminical qualities because of his association with a prostitute. But he was ultimately saved because he had begun the process of bhakti yoga. Therefore, in the previous verse, Shukadeva Goswami spoke of the person who has only once surrendered himself at the lotus feet of the Lord, Mana Krishna Padara Vindayoho, or has just begun the bhakti yoga process. Bhakti yoga begins with Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu, hearing and chanting of the Lord Vishnu's names, as in the Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Chanting is the beginning of Bhakti Yoga, and therefore Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu declares, Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Eva Kevalam, Kalo Nasti, Eva Nasti, Eva Nasti, Eva Gatir Anyataha. Quote, in this age of quarrel and hypocrisy, the only means of deliverance is chanting the holy name of the Lord. There is no other way. There is no other way. There is no other way. End quote. The process of chanting the holy name of the Lord is always superbly effective, but it is especially effective in this age of Kali. Its practical effectiveness will now be explained by Shukadeva Goswami through the history of Ajamil, who was freed from the hands of the Yamadutas. Simply because of chanting the holy name of Narayana. Parikshit Maharaj's original question was how to be freed from falling down into hell or into the hands of the Yamadutas. In reply, Shukadeva Goswami, citing this old historical example to convince Parikshit Maharaj of the potency of bhakti yoga, which begins simply with the chanting of the Lord's name. In reply, Shukadeva Goswami is citing this old historical example to convince Maharaj Pariksit Maharaj of the potency of Bhakti Yoga, which begins simply with chanting of the Lord's name. All the great authorities of Bhakti Yoga recommend the devotional process, beginning with the chanting of the holy name of Krishna, Tanama Granad, Granadibhi. Okay, so this is kind of giving like a short synopsis of this is the start of the story of Ajamila. And we learn why, like, what's the problem with illicit sex? Why is it bad? And the answer here is that one loses all brahminical qualities. You know, Ajamila, when he got trained up very nicely by his father, and he had developed all the brahminical qualities. So he was truthful, he was gentle, he was learned, he was benevolent to all the living beings. He was very faithful to his parents and to his guru, and he chanted Vedic mantras. So he was like truly an ocean of virtue. He was like a very qualified brahmana. So how can someone who is so qualified do something like, you know, seemingly so degraded, like associate with a low class woman prostitute and totally degrade his life like that? And the answer is because of, you know, bad association. The story goes that Ajamila was going to collect fruits and flowers and summit and kusha grass for a sacrifice for his father. And on his way returning home, he happened to come across this fourth class man embracing a Shudrani woman and kissing her in very, you know, out in public. And, you know, so this, you know, they were enjoying each other's company, they were intoxicated, their eyes were rolling in mundane pleasure. And, you know, in fact, at one point the girl's clothes became loose and part of her body was exposed, and Ajamila was, you know, he saw this, and this, he was, his lusty, dormant lusty desires awakened. Of course, this, in Satya Yuga, this was hardly ever seen. Like the public displays of affection, you'd never see it. It's just so rare. But of course, nowadays, public displays of affection are the norm. What's that? They're very public and they're big. You just drive down the road and you see these billboards, or you go shopping in the grocery store, or something. It's just, and especially if you go to high school nowadays, the peer pressure is just so intense that, you know, to be a brahmachari in this day and age is very difficult. You must consider, it's very difficult to remain steady and fixed up in this environment. But Prabhupada said that we can do it if we chant Hare Krishna and follow the rules and regulations. So, I know Mother Dhanakali, she kind of felt bad for the brahmacharis nowadays because it's such an unfavorable environment and so difficult. But so anyway, this is Ajamila's. Could you grab my water bottle? It's over there. Thanks. So Ajamila was seeing this, and he tried not to, like, he was learned, so he understood. he understood that this was not a good thing going on, and he knew he shouldn't be thinking about it, because, you know, he knows that we shouldn't even look at a woman. But yet he couldn't stop thinking about it. He tried to use his knowledge and his intellect and his own ability to stop, like, thinking about this scene, but he just kept meditating on it. And then when he kept meditating on it, you know, Bhagavad Gita chapter 2, text 62 and 63 happened. You know, and the whole, how one falls in from spiritual consciousness to material consciousness all begins with the mind and its endless concoctions. The mind is always thinking, feeling, and willing, and it never, never, never stops. It always thinks about something, and when it happens to think about sense objects, and exploit it, and with, you know, desire to exploit them, Then one develops attachment for them. Because, I mean, sense objects, they're innocent. They're just objects. There's nothing bad inherently about sense objects. But when we have the mentality to exploit that sense object for our own sense gratification, that's when we start to develop attachment. And from such attachment, when that attachment matures and grows, it turns into lust. And when is lust satisfied? Never. It's never, never, never satisfied. So when you have lust, naturally it's going to lead to disappointment, dissatisfaction, frustrations, anger. And when that anger matures and grows, it turns into just delusion. And then from delusion, one's memory is bewildered. And it's not like when we say memory, it's not like, you know, oh, where did I park my car, or where do I live? It's not that kind of memory. It's memory of what my real identity is. What's the purpose of life? You know, you just stop thinking about that. And then one's memory is bewildered, one's intelligence becomes lost. And this doesn't mean that one's IQ just goes to zero or something, you know, like that. But rather one's spiritual intelligence, it turns into material intelligence. And then when one has material intelligence, he falls down in the material pool, and we'll hear some of the results of material intelligence. So this is kind of a very classic, this is a common phenomenon which occurs with conditioned souls. A lot of us can relate to this incident. There's also another, this whole story of Ajahmil is very similar to another incident that's found in the Mahabharata. It's the story of Rishyashringa Brahmachari. So there's this one sage who lived in the forest, kind of in a remote forest away from the city, and he had a son named Rishyashringa. And they lived secluded from everybody, so when the son was growing up, the only other human being that the son saw was his father. So he had no association with other human beings, women, anybody. And his father, being a great sage, he trained him up in spiritual life very well. So he taught him how to meditate, how to do different yogic processes, be very regulated. And like this, because he had no distraction, he had good environment, his father's training him up, he started to develop very rare yogic powers, and he became very, very powerful through his practices. And anyway, so in a nearby kingdom, this the kingdom of Anga, there turns out that there was a great famine or a drought. And so many people were, you know, starving because there was no rain and no food. So the king, you know, asked his advisors, hey, what should we do here? And his advisors said, well, they heard about this Rishyashringa Brahmachari. And they said, well, if we can somehow get him to come to our kingdom, if he just steps foot in our kingdom because of his power, rains will come and then our problems will be solved. So the king thought about how he can get this Brahmachari to come to his kingdom. And he knew that if he just openly asked him, hey, can you come to my kingdom, it would be rejected. So he had to devise a little more clever way to get the Brahmachari to come. So what he did was he asked his guys to build a big boat that, you know, and then on the boat he had like a nice garden, and he built a hermitage on the boat. And then he had his like most beautiful courtesan, like a high-class prostitute, go on this boat, and then they floated this boat to right in the near the river where Rishyashringa Brahmachari was. So therefore this girl was going on the boat, and when he reached Rishyashringa's hermitage, the father wasn't there. He went off to go do something, so Rishyashringa was by himself. And when the boat pulled up, the girl asked Rishyashringa, or told him, you know, I'm your disciple and devotee. Are you quite comfortable here in your hermitage? Are you getting enough fruits and flowers and water? Are you in need of anything? So she was speaking very like pleasing words to Rishyashringa, and Rishyashringa became quite captivated. Not only the fact that, well, there's another human being here, but, you know, bear in mind that Rishyashringa has never seen a woman before in his life. So he was thinking that this girl wasn't just another Brahmachari, but he was very captivated by this Brahmachari. So anyway, the girl was afraid that the father would come back at any moment. So the girl just said the sweet words and then left, you know. But what that did was it created an impression in the Rishishringa's brahmachari's mind, and he couldn't stop thinking about this other brahmachari. And when the father came back to see Rishishringa brahmachari, he noticed that the whole ashram was messed up, was in disarray, and he obviously didn't tend to his daily duties. So Rishishringa, he said, or the father asked, "What's going on here?" And then Rishishringa said, "Oh, father, there's this other brahmachari that came here. He's the most beautiful figure I've ever seen in my life. I was powerfully attracted to this figure. He had such a sweet voice. We had a great time together." So he was constantly thinking about, and then his father kind of understood what happened and tried to, you know, just kind of let it be for the time. But Rishishringa's practices, meditation and yoga and everything completely went out the window. His concentration was lost, and he kept thinking about this other brahmachari. So then the plan was that this was all part of the plan, so that he would be attracted to this girl, and then after a few days, the girl would come back and then try to convince him to come to the kingdom. So naturally it worked, because he was thinking like this for so many days. When the girl came back, it was easy to convince him to come. So this is kind of another example of how, you know, one can fall down due to association, I guess. And it's interesting, because both Rishishringa Brahmachari and Jamil, they tried to, you know, engage in their practices, their spiritual practices, but they couldn't. You know, just their knowledge alone wasn't enough to resist the temptation of constantly thinking about this other form. So anyway, so that's, is there anything else on this point? Yes.
And so I was just thinking about this principle of how the underlying principle of all this is just distractions, that, you know, Maya will use whatever distraction she thinks is going to work best for you. Then, you know, she'll send that to kind of shake us away from our practice. And one thing I was thinking about today was, if you have some advice, and how do you overcome another distraction that Maya usually sends in the mind is a sense of like being disrespected or dishonored, or like not being appreciated, you know. So some devotee may be doing a service as a brahmachari and maybe doing a lot of different things, and then through some interaction with some devotee, he may feel like not that, you know, he's, and this is also just another distraction in the mind, because what does that have to do with Krishna, right? But then the mind will say, but no, like, we should learn to respect the devotee, so maybe I should tell this devotee that he should not do like that. But really, we're not so concerned about the devotional principle, we're just agitated in the mind. You know, so it just seems like a distraction. It doesn't really seem like it's very conducive for your spiritual life. So how would you deal with a distraction like that?
Well, you can, it's hard, because when you're in that mental space, you're thinking others aren't appreciating me, others are, there's something wrong with somebody else, or they're not respecting me or something, you know. We can tell that person that, well, the problem is not with them, it's with you, or it's not with outside, it's within, it's our problem, it's not out there. And they might theoretically understand that, you know, they might have knowledge, they might understand that, really, what am I getting upset about? There's really nothing here to get upset. First, just having knowledge helps, that, okay, objectively, if you look at it from an objective point of view, that there's, I don't know why, I shouldn't be feeling, I mean, I am feeling this way, I can't help feeling this way, at least where I am right now, I'm conditioned. But at least, just with at least beginning with theoretical knowledge of, okay, I know I'm not there yet, but I understand where there is. That can help us to get there. And then, if it happens and we're feeling that way, then, you know, just try to come to devotees, associate with devotees, they'll help us put it in the proper perspective. And they'll explain to us what the situation actually is like, and then like, yeah, I know. They won't like to hear it, but they know that we're right. They know the devotees are right. And then you just hear and chant, engage in bhakti yoga. It's really the ultimate remedy for getting over these kind of things, is just to try to increase your taste for hearing and chanting, and then these other things just become insignificant. So, it's, guess. What I can say on that. Anything else?
Ooh, you said about the Ajamil that the reason he fall was bad association. So by just seeing that couple, it's considered to be like an association.
Well, he was associating with them in his mind because he saw them initially, which wouldn't have been such a bad thing, if he just saw it and then, oh, something's going on there and moved on with his day, but he just kept meditating on it. And in that way, he was associating with those, the woman. And then later, he actually does, even though he's married, I think he goes and tries to find the prostitute and engages in relations with her. And there's a whole history which we're going to talk about. Okay, we got a lot of verses to cover. So, okay, text 22. Vanjakshay kaitavaischayar kahitam vrittimastitaha vibrat kutumbam ashuchir yatayam. Translation: this fallen brahmana Ajamil gave trouble to others by arresting them, by cheating them in gambling, or by directly plundering them. This was the way he earned his livelihood and maintained his wife and children. Purport: this verse indicates how degraded one becomes simply by indulging in illicit sex with a prostitute. Illicit sex is not possible with a chaste or aristocratic woman, but only with unchaste shudras. The more society allows prostitution and illicit sex, the more impetus it gives to cheaters, thieves, plunderers, drunkards, and gamblers. Therefore, we first advise all the disciples in our Krishna consciousness movement to avoid illicit sex, which is the beginning of all abominable life, and which is followed by meat eating, gambling, intoxication, one after another. Of course, restraint is very difficult, but it is quite possible if one fully surrenders to Krishna, since all these abominable habits gradually become distasteful for a Krishna conscious person. If illicit sex is allowed to increase in a society, however, the entire society will be condemned, for it will be full of rogues, thieves, cheaters, and so forth. So this verse is just talking about more of the problems with illicit sex, especially if you do so in a gross way. It has its reactions. It starts with just being agitated. You'll find that people who are very lusty, they're usually agitated a lot because they're always dissatisfied, and they might just display frustration and anger. And so these are like kind of like the subtle effects of illicit sex. And then if you engage in it, there's gross results, like you can have kids, and to maintain the kids, you might have to do things like cheat and gamble and steal. It just leads just to more and more degraded behavior. And then it kind of begins with illicit sex. So Prabhupada advises everybody in the Krishna conscious movement to restrain from illicit sex, and that's possible by surrendering to Krishna. Okay, anything on this verse? Okay, so we'll go to text 23. Evam nivasatastasya lalayanasya tat sutan kalo jagan mahan rajan astas. Translation: my dear king, while he thus spent his time in abominable sinful activities to maintain his family of many sons, 88 years of his life passed by. Now, I was trying to understand this verse earlier because the Bhagavatam was written thousands of years ago, and when this and in the Bhagavatam itself, it's saying that this story is very, very old. In other places we hear that it's in Satya Yuga that this pastime takes place. Now, in Satya Yuga, the residents live for 100,000 years, and in Treta Yuga they live for 10,000 years, in Dwapara Yuga they live for 1,000 years, and in Kali Yuga they only live for 100 years. So here we have an example of someone in Satya Yuga who's only living to be 88 years old. So I guess there's one of two ways we can understand this. One is that it's relative to the yuga that he's in, to the age that he's in. So maybe 88 years of his Satya Yuga life, which would, he'd be more like 88,000 years old. Or it could mean that maybe he just, because of his bad habits and his sinful activities, maybe he was in Satya Yuga and he only lived 88 years old. Because if you engage in sinful activity, your life decreases. Whatever the case may be. Nevertheless, the point, it's kind of just a technical detail. It doesn't really matter one way or another, but just interesting anecdote. Okay, well, text 24. Tasya pravayasya putra tasya tasyam tu yogamaha balo narayano namna pitros jadaito mrisham. Translation, that old man Ajamil had 10 sons, of whom the youngest was a baby named Narayana. Since Narayana was the youngest of all the sons, he was naturally very dear to both his father and his mother. Purport, the word pravayashaha indicates Ajamil's sinfulness, because although he was 88 years old, he had a very young child. According to Vedic culture, one should leave home as soon as he has reached 50 years of age. One should not live at home and go on producing children. Sex life is allowed for 25 years between the ages of 25 and 45, or at most 50. After that, one should give up the habit of sex life and leave home as a vanaprastha, and then properly take sannyas. Ajamil, however, because of his association with the prostitute, lost all Brahminical culture and became most sinful even in his so-called household life. So, and I remember Krishna Smarana Prabhu, when he was giving class, he said one time that he was a good example of this. When he was 49 years old and 3 months, he quit his job because he included the 9 month period that he was in the womb, you know, because you're supposed to retire when you're 50. So he, on the day that he turned 49 and 3 months, he quit. Okay. So is there anything else on that point? Anyone want to bring anything up? Okay. Okay, next verse, 25. Sabadha hridayastasmin arbhakake kalavasjine nirikshamanas talilam mumude jarato brisham. Because of the child's broken language and awkward movements, old Ajamil was very much attached to him. He always took care of the child and enjoyed the child's activities. Purport, here it is clearly mentioned that the child, Narayana, was so young that he could not even speak or walk properly. Since the old man was very attached to the child, he enjoyed the child's activities, and because the child's name was Narayana, the old man always chanted the holy name of Narayana. Although he was referring to the small child and not to the original Narayana, the name of Narayana was so powerful that even by chanting his son's name, he was becoming purified. Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Hare Kevalam. Srila Rupa Goswami has therefore declared that if one's mind is somehow or other attracted by the holy name of Krishna, tasmat kinapyaupayena mana krishne niveshayat, one is on the path of liberation. It is customary in Hindu society for parents to give their children names like Krishnadas, Govindadas, Narayanadas, and Vrindavandas. Thus they chant the names Krishna, Govinda, Narayana, and Vrindavan, and get the chance to be purified. Okay, so here we get a little bit of insight into the kind of chanting that Ajamil was doing. So technically, there's a technical term for the kind of chanting that Ajamil was doing. It was called Chaya Namabhas, with a specific attitude called Sanketa. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives a really nice description of the different kinds of chanting that one can do and the different results that appear from all the different kinds of chanting. So there's basically three general categories of chanting. One is the Namaparad stage, where you're chanting with offenses. Then there's Namabhas, which is the clearing stage. And then there's Chudanam, which is the pure chanting in the holy name. And then within Namabhas chanting, there's three further subcategories. The lowest form of Namabhas chanting, which isn't in, even which is somehow in the category of Namabhas, but is really not Namabhas. It's actually Namaparad. It's called Pratibimba Namabhas. And Pratibimba Namabhas is chanting the holy names of the Lord with anartas that were nurtured by wicked and perverted knowledge. So this kind of chanting in Pratibimbas is kind of like the Mayavadis and how they chant Hare Krishna. So it's described that the pure holy name is coming, and it's being reflected off the lake of Mayavad thought. And what's coming out is a distorted image of the real thing. So that's what it's like in this stage, like Mayavadis. When they might chant Hare Krishna, but they're distorting the whole thing. So their chanting is not real chanting. The reason, as Jai Jagannath was describing yesterday, why Mayavadi thought is so destructive when it comes to spiritual life, because they have a total misconception about Krishna, his name, his form, his qualities, his pastimes, as being Maya, as false, something temporary, it's contaminated. And how can you chant Krishna's name if you're having the understanding that it's temporary and false and Maya? It actually destroys one's spiritual life. It's described, though, that even with this chanting, one can gain sayujya, mukti, liberation by becoming one with the Lord. But he also might become free from material suffering, but his spiritual life is still doomed, even with that. And the main reason why his spiritual life is doomed is because Vaishnavas won't associate with Mayavadis. And if you're a Mayavad, if you're chanting with this conception, pure Vaishnavas won't associate with you. And if you don't, if you don't associate with pure Vaishnavas, what hope do you have of making spiritual advancement? So that's really the main problem with this. And since you're thinking that Krishna's name is material or something, you won't be able to remember Krishna, and therefore you'll never get Krishna prema. So therefore you're doomed in that sense. So that's kind of like the lowest level of chanting. And then the next higher level of Namabhas chanting is called Chaya Namabhas. And this is chanting the holy names of the Lord with the Nartas, but the Nartas were born out of ignorance. You just don't know, you're innocent. You might chant the holy name and you don't know what the holy name is all about or what it means, you just somehow chant it. So this is considered to be, the example was given of like a partial infiltration. So the holy name is compared to the brilliant sun, and this Chaya Namabhas is like a partial infiltration of that brilliance coming. It's not the full thing. Abhas means like kind of slight, indistinct presence. That's what kind of Abhas means. So it's something that's like the real thing, but it's not the full thing. And in this Chaya Namabhas, there's four attitudes. So now we're in Chaya Namabhas, and there's four attitudes that one can have in this kind of chanting. One is called Sanketa. Sanketa means unintentionally or unknowingly chanting the names of the Lord. And within Sanketa, there's two subdivisions. So there's chanting the names of Vishnu. You're trying to, with the intention, you want to chant the names of Vishnu, but you have a material conception about what Vishnu is. And then the other subdivision is where somehow you chant the names of Vishnu, but you didn't intend to chant the names of Vishnu. It's just, you might even be thinking of something else, but somehow you chant the names of Vishnu and you remember the name. So this subdivision is the kind of chanting that Ajamila was doing. He had no idea what he was chanting. He's just chanting the name of his son. He was meaning something completely different, but yet he was still thinking of the name. And the example was given of the word haram, which I guess is in the Urdu language. I think it's Arabic. It's like a very common Arabic word, haram. And if anybody who speaks Arabic, it's a common, says this word, haram, he gets the benefit of Chai Namabas chanting. So everybody in Pakistan who speaks Arabic, mostly everybody, if they say this word haram, they get this benefit because they don't even know what they're chanting.
Then one is when you think the form of Vishnu is material, mm-hmm. and in the other, you may or may
well, you have a material conception, but you have a material conception.
Okay. And in the other, you may or may not have a conception of God, but your chanting of Vishnu's name is done inadvertently or just...
Right.
Just like, oops, like something like that.
Something like, you know, like we go out on Harinam and people might chant. They have no idea what they're doing. They're just chanting.
Oh, so that's...
That's also in the same category, yeah.
But the main thing is it's devoid of offenses. That's what distinguishes.
Right, because if you don't know what you're doing, you're just chanting the names. You're not being offensive. So that's why it's so important for us to go out in Harinams. We don't know how many people are being saved from going to hell just because they, you know, they heard a Harinam party go by, or they chanted Hare Krishna, or they read Hare Krishna somewhere. You know, like Prabhupada, he was more. There was like two articles written, I guess, about the Krishna consciousness movement. One was very favorable. And one was very unfavorable to the movement. But the one that, and then Prabhupada said that he liked the one that was unfavorable, that talked badly about the devotees or the movement. Why? Because that author used the name Krishna more often in that particular article than the one that was more favorable. The one that was more favorable, they hardly used the name Krishna. So like that, so many people just by reading Krishna, they can get this benefit and be saved from going to hell. Well, he got a lot of credit, though, for, you know, he got some Sukriti, I guess, for either writing those names and then also, he might have been a little bit offensive. He was perhaps, he had the offensive mentality, he was blaspheming Vaishnavas or something, but nevertheless, he still got credit for either himself chanting the name or others chanting because of his article. Like, he got the credit. Anyway, So one is sankheta, unintentional, and then there's also parihasa, which is in jest, or you like ridicule somebody, or in jest, kind of like the example was given of Jarasandha. And then there's stoma, I think, which is when you're chanting the holy names with derisively, like Shishupal. And then there's hela, which is with neglect or disregard. So these are the kind of attitudes one can have in this Chaya Namabhas. I think it was stoma. It's derisively, like Shishupal. Apparently, So these are the different attitudes one can have. And Ajamil had sankheta when he was chanting, and we're going to hear about what the result that he got was. And the main results that you get from this kind of chanting is that because you're innocent, you attract pure devotees to come in your life who see that little spark of devotion and they want to come fan it to help you grow in spiritual life. So because you're innocent, they see that you're chanting, so pure devotees will come and help you in your spiritual life and you'll be able to make rapid advancement. So that's one of the benefits. I mean, you could also get liberation and stuff, but that's not really what devotees are after. The main thing is that they don't cut themselves off from pure devotee association through which they can gain proper knowledge and then actual love for God. Okay, and then the last, like the most advanced stage of Namabhas chanting is Shraddha Namabhas. So this kind of chanting is when, you know, you're chanting, you have anartas, and you might have desires for sense pleasure and liberation, but you're chanting with faith, and you're chanting with, you're constantly chanting, and you're chanting with faith that, okay, you have a somewhat proper conception about the names, and you're chanting, but you still have anartas. So this is called Shraddha Namabhas. And the reason you have faith is because you were impressed by seeing someone else who has faith. So you got that initial faith by, oh wow, he has firm faith in the chanting. And because of that, being impressed like that, then you also can gain some faith. It's not real faith in one sense. It's more like symptoms of faith. Some little bit of genuine faith might be there, but mostly it's just symptoms of faith at this point. And then with this kind of chanting, one can make very rapid advancement very quickly. Once an art has become dispelled, and the pure devotees will help you in your progression, and very quickly you can come to better stages of chanting. Okay. Also here in this purport, it's saying that in Hindu society, parents give their children names like Krishnadas, Govindadas, etc. So if you're going to name your, if you have kids and you're going to name your kids something, it's nice to name them a name of Krishna. Particularly, it's nice if you can name them a primary name of Krishna. There's primary names and there's secondary names. The primary names are like what are mentioned here, Govinda, Vrindavan, or Radhanath, or Brajagopal, or, you know, there's so many names that describe Krishna's activities and pastimes and excellences. And then there's other names that also refer to God, but refer to God more in like the, you know, in his dealings with the material world, like as being the creator, the maintainer, like that. So names like Yageshvara or Hara or any name which refers to like the creator, maintainer, those are secondary names. So primary names, they can actually result, if you chant them, in going, you know, in the Lord's abode. And then primary and secondary names, they'll result in, you'll just get extra piety and maybe liberation. Yes.
I was wondering, I was hearing something recently about how there's four things that keep us from chanting the pure holy name, you know, like anarthas and hridayadurbalyam. And then the fourth category of obstacles is called tattva brahma, which means to be an illusion about the tattvas of devotional service. Yeah. And I was wondering if you've heard anything about the relationship of that with faith, because it seems that really what pushes our chanting forward is a deepening of faith. And I'm trying to understand the relationship between these things, because I always thought to myself, like, well, I mean, what's the illusion? I know I'm a servant of God. Krishna is God. So it's hard for me to sometimes understand where I have an illusion about the philosophy. You know what I'm saying? Although I'm not able to act in that way in all aspects of my life. Right? Mm. So, but clearly it's there. It's just I'm not able to properly identify it.
Yeah, so, you know, thanks to devotees, they've given the proper conception about chanting. So you might have proper conception about Sambandhagyan, but your faith is still not totally, you know, there's certainly faith. It's considered symptoms of faith. It's not real, genuine faith yet, but it's symptoms of faith. Whereas in Chayanamabhas, faith isn't really there. I mean, it's not like a highlighted at all. And you're just chanting. Because you have no proper knowledge, so therefore you don't get as much benefit as you get from chanting with proper knowledge. So with proper knowledge, you get greater benefit, and then your faith increases gradually. So I guess it just helps your faith, in a sense. Proper knowledge helps build your faith. That's how I would say the relationship would be. Okay. All right, 5 minutes left. Still got a bunch of verses. Okay, text 26. Bunjana prapidpa kadan balakam snehayantritaha mojayan payayan mudho na veda gatamantakam. When Ajamil chewed food and ate it, he called the child to chew and eat. And when he drank, he called the child to drink also. Always engaged in taking care of the child and calling his name, Narayana, Ajamil could not understand that his own time was now exhausted and that death was upon him. Purport, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is so kind to the conditioned soul. Although this man completely forgot Narayana, he was calling his child, saying, Narayana, please come, eat this food. Narayana, please come, drink this milk. Somehow or other, therefore, he was attached to the name Narayana. This is called Agyata Sukriti. Although calling for his son, he was unknowingly chanting the name of Narayana, and the holy name of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is so transcendentally powerful that his chanting was being counted and recorded. So it was said that right when Ajamil named his son Narayana the very first time, That was enough for him to completely destroy all of his sinful activities, neutralize them. And then after that, when he kept saying Narayana thousands and thousands of times, you know, throughout his son's life, it was actually engaging in sadhana. So he kept chanting Narayana and he engaged in sadhana, and therefore he made rapid advancement in Krishna consciousness by doing this. Okay, anything on that one? Okay, text 27. Saivam vartamano gyo mrityukala upastate matim chakara tanaye bale narayana vaye. When the time of death arrived for the foolish Ajamil, he began thinking exclusively of his son Narayana. Report in the second canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Shukadev Goswami says, Etavan sankhya yogabhyam svadharma parinishtaya janmalabha parabhungsham. Quote, the highest perfection of human life, achieved either by complete knowledge of matter and spirit, by acquirement of mystic power, or by perfect discharge of one's occupational duty, is to remember the Supreme Personality of Godhead at the end of life. End quote. Somehow or other, Ajamil consciously or unconsciously chanted the name of Narayana at the time of death, Ante Narayana Smritihi, and therefore he became all perfect, simply by concentrating his mind on the name of Narayana. It may also be concluded that Ajamil, who was the son of a Brahmana, was accustomed to worshipping Narayana in his youth, because in every Brahmana's house, there is worship of the Narayana Shila. This system is still present in India. In a rigid Brahmana's house, there is Narayana Seva, worship of Narayana. Therefore, although the contaminated Ajamil was calling for his son, by concentrating his mind on the holy name of Narayana, he remembered the Narayana he had very faithfully worshipped in his youth. In this regard, Srila Sridhar Swami expressed his verdict as follows. According to the Bhakti Siddhanta, it is to be analyzed that because Ajamil constantly chanted his son's name, Narayana, he was elevated to the platform of bhakti, although he did not know it. End quote. Similarly, Srila Viraragava Acharya gives this opinion. Although at the time of death he was chanting the name of his son, he nevertheless concentrated his mind upon the holy name of Narayana. Srila Vijayadvaja Tirtha gives a similar opinion. So directly or indirectly, Ajamil factually remembered Narayana at the time of death. Ante Narayana Smritihi. So that's the goal of life, is to remember the Lord at the time of death. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that, you know, whatever attracts the mind of a dying man becomes the beginning of his next life. So here, Ajamil was attracted to the name of Narayana, and therefore the Vishnu Dutas came and helped him and saved him from the Yamadutas. So directly or indirectly, whether Ajamil was actually thinking, remembering of Narayana, the Narayana that he used to worship in his youth, or whether he was just remembering his son, but the name Narayana was coming out, and he remembered the name. So whether directly or indirectly, still he gets the benefit of having remembered Narayana at the time of death, and he gets that benefit. Okay. Well, yes, you have something.
This kind of remembering, it's for just Satya Yuga, or in our days it's possible too? Because I don't remember what context, but Gokulananda was saying it's not that you just, you know, see a picture of Krishna the moment you die, but you don't think about him, you know, he'll save you. And you have to do that consciously.
Right. And the reason Ajamil was able to do it is because he was chanting Narayana all throughout, you know, especially during the last years of his life because of his younger son. He's always thinking, he got attracted to the name Narayana, which happened to be the name of his son, but
yeah,
he was...
Yeah, but again, you're attracted to the... Okay, makes sense.
So that's how it worked for him. Well, that's true. God and his name are the same. And then... Well, here it says that... I mean, well, Prabhupada says that... In one place, Prabhupada says that he was remembering the Narayana he had faithfully worshipped in his youth. That's what Prabhupada says here, but in other places it says, no, he was thinking of his son, actually. Although he might have... And in another place, he was thinking of the name. So whether it's directly or indirectly, here it's saying, it's still all remembrance of Narayana. Okay. Well, I didn't get a chance to finish. I made it, tried, but there's three more verses, and I don't know if you guys really want to stick around for another 45 minutes. Nobody's okay. Well, okay, I think we'll probably just stop here, and then Charyanishtha probably will, if he's even here. Maybe Jai Jagannath, he'll finish this section and then probably do the next section also. So, okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki. Olga, we're going tomorrow.